This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 17th at 11:06 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like the people who say athletes should stay out of politics will say politicians should stay out of sports.
It's funny how that works. Lots of Pauls praising the Big Ten football decision this week. All right, let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd Snollygosters who are trying to project friendly smiles through face masks this fall. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up later in the podcast, we will dole out our Snollygoster of the Week award, and it really was an easy one this week.
But first, how we vote is once again a matter of controversy here in Ohio. It always is. Why is this so hard? The latest controversy involves how we get our early paper ballots to our local boards of election. There are two ways, of course, by mail or by dropping them off at a designated spot.
Lots to go through here, but here are the headlines just from the past week, from the past few days. A judge ruled that voters can send in their applications to vote by mail using email or fax, you know, standard technology in this modern age. But then Secretary of State Frank LaRose appealed that ruling, saying fearing that Russian hackers would take advantage of the emailing of applications to infiltrate boards of elections systems.
Next, we turn to stamps. You know, postage. Democrats and voting rights groups want the state to pay for postage on the envelopes to return your mail-in ballots. It would cost about $3 million. Secretary of State Frank LaRose asked a panel of legislators called the Controlling Board to approve spending that money. Senate President Larry Obhoff does not like the idea, so he pulled one member who favors the idea from the controlling board and replaced him with another lawmaker who has fought against prepaid postage for ballots. So it failed, and as of now, save a few stamps for your mail-in ballot.
And then there's the issue of drop boxes, special secure boxes where you can just drop off your paper ballot, basically an extra secure mailbox. Frank LaRose ordered only one per county, usually at the Board of Elections office. Democrats and voting rights groups want more to make it easier for people to drop off their ballots. A judge in Columbus ruled counties can install more than one, but LaRose appealing that ruling.
All right. Joining us now is Jen Miller. She leads the Ohio League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan voting rights organization. Jen, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thanks, guys.
Let's start with the question we asked at the very top. Why is this so hard?
So, I mean, the great thing about Ohio is we do have three options for voting and, absentee, early, and in person on election day in your neighborhood polling location. And so we're glad to have options, but those options need to be improved. There's a lot of common sense improvements, especially for our absentee system, that historically less than 10% of voters would do vote by mail, or what we call no excuse absentee. And now we're gonna see significant numbers doing so. I don't feel like it should be so hard to make those common sense improvements at the Ohio General Assembly or with the Secretary of State, but Ohio typically doesn't like to change election laws, even when they are bipartisan. Those improvements are bipartisan. So something like prepaid postage that is supported by Republican Secretary of State, the election officials, the League, many others, would be great. And by the way, it's not $3 million total. It's up to that amount.
Okay,
it may not even be that amount, you know. But also, you know, updating our absentee request system to a digital system makes complete sense. When we adopted our absentee voting system, you know, technology wasn't where it is today. And our postal service actually was far more funded and efficient as well. And so what we're seeing here is a need to update our absentee system overall, and a reluctance by those in power to do so, which leads to lawsuits.
Well, Jim Miller, let's suss out these claims, starting first with one you just mentioned, requesting an absentee ballot via email or fax. Frank LaRose cites security concerns. Are those concerns at all valid. It sounds like you think they're surmountable, right? We should be able to overcome them. But are there real concerns that could prevent officials from having a secure system rolled out in time for November?
So I struggle to understand the security concerns here for a couple reasons. The first is our military voters are often submitting their applications by fax or email overseas. And so it seems as though we already have that technology. We had experts from the Brennan Center file an amicus brief in that case explaining how it could be done securely. So I think that it could be done and should be done. So many of us do not have printers at home, don't actually pay our bills, but with stamps. And so just the idea that we would upgrade to allow more individuals to apply digitally makes a lot of sense. I think it's also more efficient for boards of elections, potentially.
The worry is email attachments. We all know the danger of opening up an attachment from somebody we don't know. It could be malware. It could be something nefarious to, you know, hack into your checking account or your credit card information. That is a legitimate concern, no?
Well, again, I mean, I'm not a cybersecurity expert, but we had experts file amicus briefs on how this could be done safely, and we're already doing it safely with our military voters overseas. And so I guess, yes, it's a concern, but it's a concern that is surmountable and one that we should, you know, tackle in sake of access for voters. Mm-hmm.
We mentioned how Larry Obhoff switched members of the controlling board in order to defeat the proposal for prepaid postage on these mail-in ballots. It's a tactic similar to the one John Kasich used a few years ago to pass Medicaid expansion. What did you think when you saw Larry Obhoff did that?
You know, I just think it's regrettable. Something like prepaid postage should not be so controversial. Let's keep in mind that Secretary LaRose was using money out of his own coffers. These were not taxpayer dollars. But more fees from other aspects of his agency. And also, I just want to mention that there's only one place where you can buy singular stamps, and that's at the post office. So if you are perhaps on a tight or fixed income, which is very common right now, but you're also concerned about contracting COVID for very good reasons, the only thing you would be able to do was actually go into a post office, which kind of defeats potentially why someone would want to vote absentee. Otherwise, if you're limiting your trips and you're going to a supermarket, you have to buy an entire book. I have to be honest, I'm not really that young, but I don't have stamps in my house either.
Oh, no.
A lot of folks don't.
I buy a book of stamps and I never can find them. They always put them in a different spot.
It takes us a year to use a book of stamps, probably.
Yeah, and it's like checks. Where do we put the checkbook? I write maybe one or two checks a month at that. When this ruling came down that day, I got I got one of those surveys from your doctor to ask how the appointment went. And I noticed that the envelope to return the survey had postage paid. So I assume they do that to make it easier for me and to encourage me to fill out that survey and send it back so I don't have to go searching for a stamp. You just think the voting would be that way as well. The other question I have, Jen, is do you need just one stamp to return your absentee ballot, or do you need more than one? Do we know exactly how much postage we need to return that ballot? Is that clear?
No, actually, I think that's a really important point, is that a voter would need to read their instructions carefully. Let's keep in mind that even in one county, you could have different size ballots, right? One ballot could have more candidates, could have more issues, and therefore be a larger, heavier document, and therefore might need more stamps. So no, you'll see through social media, even some of my own members saying, oh, you need this many stamps. You can't tell. The only way you can tell is to read the instructions from your Board of Elections.
So there is a scenario where you fill out your ballot, do everything correctly, only put one stamp on the envelope, mail it, and it doesn't make it because you didn't put enough postage on there, correct?
Yeah, and my dog is mad about that.
We like dogs on Snallygoster. We don't have enough of them.
Sorry about that. Speaking of stamps, like the UPS driver is like pulling up and he has questions about that guy. So
as he should.
It's the brown uniform. Gets them every time.
Jen, we're swimming in litigation here regarding voting matters. Are there still lawsuits out there regarding the ones that we've talked about then that were ruled on this week?
We got the box. Don't forget the boxes now.
The Dropbox.
The Dropbox. Another common sense thing.
It seems to be, again, there could be security concerns. That's what's being cited. I mean,
So and remember that we also have lawsuits in federal court on signature matching and Dropboxes as well. So let's talk about Dropboxes. League's priority for months now has been multiple Dropboxes per county, even more so than prepaid postage, though we absolutely support prepaid postage. Here's why. We saw all the challenges that folks had with the U.S. Postal Service. And this is not me beating up on the good men and women who work for the Postal Service. The system has just changed. It's not as efficient as it used to be. And during the primary, that really came to bear, whether it was ballots showing up without a postmark, which is required for it to count, whether it was ballots being lost in the mail or just severely delayed. So the idea of multiple drop boxes, in my opinion, fixes two issues. Also, if you don't have stamps or can't afford stamps, but you have a drop box close to you, that's a great option for you. One drop box is fundamentally unfair, especially when so many individuals are going to be voting absentee.
Yeah.
If you're in a rural area, you might have to drive several towns over within your county. That could be a long drive. If you're in an urban area, it might be hard to get to that one drop box.
Especially if you don't have a car.
Yes, if you don't have a car, you might have to take multiple transit, lines to get there. And so, Dropboxes becomes a really great way to do it. Dropboxes are secure. And let's keep in mind, it's not just for ballots. You could also put your registration forms or your absentee request forms in there. So, Dropboxes are secure in that a Republican and Democrat would be emptying those. We have counties who want to do those. And, my lawsuit at this point in time, we're just asking Secretary LaRose to rescind the directive that limits counties to one drop box.
And that's the one that's pending as we record it today. He's appealing.
Right, a judge ruled on that Wednesday, and then LaRose immediately appealed.
Actually, no, there's two of them, though, which is what's confusing. So there's the Ohio Democratic Party one that's in state court. That was the Franklin County judge that ruled. And then there is another one in federal court where the judge has not ruled yet that the League and APRI and NAACP have brought.
I see. Well, Jen, this is really all very, very understandable because we had no idea back in March when our primary was canceled, the in-person voting was canceled, that we might be dealing with a pandemic in November. This has caught us completely by surprise. We had no idea that people would want to avoid going to polling places and not catch a coronavirus in November. We had no idea that mail-in voting was going to be important in November. So you can understand why election officials are caught off guard, right?
Not really anymore. I mean, I understood that we were caught off guard in the primary, but I don't understand why 5 months later we couldn't make some very common sense improvements.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this in March, in April. We said, what are we going to do in November? And basically, the state has made no changes to its system. They did send out reminders and they send out applications to everybody, but they've done that before. That's not a pandemic thing. Maybe they did it this time because of it, but they have sent out those applications to every voter before.
Yes, absolutely. We usually do it every even year, and we appreciate that. And we're glad that the Secretary of State sent out absentee applications to every voter on the rolls in Ohio. And again, those are just applications. But ultimately what we're seeing is a absentee system that has not been updated for over a decade after massive changes to both technology and the U.S. Postal Service, then a demonstrated need during the primary to update those systems, as well as common sense, easy, cost-effective ways that it could be done, where parties on both sides of the aisle supported them, whether that's online absentee requests, whether that's prepaid postage, so many of these policies, and the state has failed to update those. And in my opinion, this is negligence on the state's part for not taking seriously the experiences of Ohio voters and not taking seriously the reason why we would want to encourage absentee voting. And let's be clear about that. Absentee voting is secure. A person has to prove themselves twice in absentee voting, which is unlike early and in-person voting on election day. You have to prove yourself to get your ballot, and then you have to prove yourself for your ballot to count. Mm-hmm. It's a secure, common sense way to vote this year in the middle of a pandemic where we expect high voter turnout. So I have to say that I'm really frustrated, but Ohio tends to upgrade its election systems through the courts. Early voting came through the courts, election administration plans and post-election audits, which really increased security significantly, initially came through the courts. So once again, that's what we see is voter advocates like myself going to judges to make the case that we need a more constitutional approach.
Jen Miller, head of Ohio chapter of League of Women Voters, and always get the name of the dog. Jen, what's the name of your dog?
His name is Marley.
Marley. What a great name. So, for Marley and for Jen, thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster on WOSU.
Thank you so much. You take care.
Thanks, Jen. We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious Seabus is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Football became a big political football this week as everyone rushed to praise the Big Ten for finding, quote, new scientific evidence that allows it to have a fall football season after all.
That's right. It is very good news for Buckeye football fans and for President Trump, who, of course, is taking credit for the conference reversing course on its decision to cancel fall football.
Yeah, Governor DeWine, former Dayton Flyer defensive back John Husted, and a lot of other people as well, saying it's great news for Ohio State, great news for the rest of the conference. Some medical professionals not so sure because of the risk of COVID-19. OSU's football team doctor Jim Borchers chaired the Big Ten medical subcommittee that studied this issue. He seems confident based on new improvements in testing.
Our ability to test consistently and uniformly amongst the conference and to provide that was really important. And I think we have been very comfortable with the idea that we'll be able to provide daily rapid testing.
Go Bucks. You ready, Mike?
Yeah, Jim Borchers is my doctor.
Really?
Yes. I'm a runner, okay. And I had a strained piriformis.
Don't know what that is.
Commonly known as a pain in the butt.
Okay.
And Jim Borchers fixed it.
Okay.
There you go.
Good to know.
A good man. He's a good man.
Okay. So I guess he knows something about COVID-19 testing as well. They think that they have done enough to with daily antigen testing of athletes. It's going to be a tough thing to overcome some of these levels they've set. If 5% of a team tests positive, they can't play. If there's an outbreak, then there's no game, and they have such a tight window to fit. They have 9 weeks to fit in 8 games in order to be eligible for the college football playoff. And if you have a couple outbreaks, it's going to be dicey.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're giving it a shot. They were probably a little premature in canceling the season. I think they thought the other conferences would go along. Only the Pac-10 did. And they did face
Pac-12. Pac-12, that's
right.
You're dating yourself.
That's right. After COVID, it could be back down to the Pac-10.
Yeah.
Anyway, could be back down to the Big Ten. But it's just so why everything becomes political right now. But this became political. I mean, Donald Trump led the fight. You know, he tweeted it out early on.
Yeah, he was
the Big Ten
big advocate for doing this.
You know, because, and then everything's political, and I'm glad Big Ten football is going to come back. I have enjoyed watching college and pro football on TV this past week or so. I just hope that they do it safe, and I hope that these are college athletes. They are not paid. Yeah, they get scholarships, but they are not paid. They're not NFL players. I hope that they take the players' safety first. It looks like the Big Ten is trying to do that with this plan. It's a pretty conservative plan, And I just hope that they're trying to keep these players safe. I hope they open up the season to all sports now, not just football. Yeah. Being
that's
a runner, I want cross country back.
Yeah, we still don't know if that's going to happen. In the initial announcement on Wednesday, they said that news would be coming in the in the following days, as well as information about winter sports like wrestling and basketball.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish. Basketball, that's a lot of money there.
Yeah, that's a lot of money that they lost last year.
Yeah, but I'm glad it's back. I hope they do it safely, and I hope that, you know, because the reason why you can't, they're not going to have fans in the stands, so that's going to help limit the spread. But these athletes aren't going to live in a bubble. So if they're going to be exposed, you would think. They could expose others, and we're trying to limit exposure to not just athletes, but to the athletes' friends and the athletes' parents and grandparents.
I would say that I would think that the best place for a college athlete to be here at Ohio State at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, it's almost a bubble. I mean, there's a lot of precautions that are taken over there security-wise given non-pandemic times. Yeah. I think, you know, the quarterback, Justin Fields, I think the safest place for him to be right now as far as precautions against COVID-19 would be at the OSU Training Center. I don't think it's going to be on Fifth Avenue or wherever. I think it's going to be at an OSU facility where they're making people wear masks, where they're really highly controlling the environment. They're going to try to keep one tier of people from coming in contact with another tier of people. The NFL has done really well at that so far. They've really limited outbreaks.
Again, the difference between the NFL and college, NFL players are making a lot of money.
They are making a lot of money, and I somewhat feel for these players, right? These college players who are, they're the ones on the front line. They're the one whose health is being risked, and it's being risked, let's be honest, because of the $700 and some million that the Big Ten made in revenue last year.
And for a few select players, let's look at, I don't want to turn this into a sports podcast, but Joe Burrow would not be the Heisman Trophy winner, would not be the number one draft pick if it weren't for his one senior season. And there is likely a player out there that will have a breakout year this year that we didn't know about coming in, and that's his chance. So back to politics, I just hate the fact that people say athletes can't take political stances and then they demand their politicians force, you know, sports to be played.
Yeah.
Politics is a part of life. Let everybody have a voice, whether they are for Big Ten football, against Big Ten football, for civil rights, for the police. Everyone, let their expression, express your opinions, be civil, and we'll decide for ourselves.
Hear, hear. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week. We give it every week to the shrewdest politician or political move. A pretty easy award to hand out this week.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier. Larry Obhoff, he did the old switcheroo on the state controlling board, took off a person who would have supported paying for postage for mail-in ballots to someone who opposes the postage for mail-in ballots. So took a page out of John Kasich's playbook. Now, Larry Obhoff says he did that because he thinks that this decision should rest with the legislature, not this small little group. And he has a point there, but it still was pretty shrewd.
But again, Jen Miller, as she said, a lot of election law has been handled through the courts. It hasn't been handled through the legislature. I don't think it was a strange move at all for Frank LaRose to try to go to the controlling board in lieu of the legislature not taking action.
No, this is, you can't compare $3 million in postage, up to $3 million in postage, to the hundreds of millions of dollars we spent to expand Medicaid, a decision also made through the controlling board.
Yeah, this also lets Mike DeWine off the hook because his appointee to the controlling board didn't have to vote and break the tie.
Yeah, he escaped again.
Larry Obhoff, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, please send it to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, thanks to our audio producer, Eric French, our student producer, Jack Long, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.